English Listening Comprehension Test, Spring 2012, Advanced Level. This test is in five parts. Part 5 has separate directions. In parts 1, 2, 3, and 4, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part 1 twice. First, listen to it straight through.
Even the most devoted readers have trouble finishing a blog post, much less an entire book. And today I'm talking with the Los Angeles Times book critic David Ulan. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Susan.
You've written a book titled The Lost Art of Reading. There you mix book criticism with memoirs from your life. You're particularly looking at the modern changing landscape of literature in the era of texts and tweets. Now, David, how does a book critic wind up writing a book about being too distracted to read books? About how this has changed reading habits?
The idea grew out of an essay I published in the LA Times. For months, I'd been having this trouble with distraction. You know, a lack of focus, sort of difficulties in concentrating. I was reluctant to confess this. Yeah, but I was pushed by my editor, you know. She said, if I was having this problem, surely others were too. The essay received an immense response, more than any other piece of writing I've ever published, with 98% of the people saying, thank you. It wasn't just me.
The book is framed around your son Noah's irritation at having to write comments on a novel for his high school teacher. Isn't there a computer application to do that?
Reading, by nature, is contemplative. You are immersed in story and language. Noah's concern about writing those comments was that it pulled him out of the story, another form of distraction. These things are always some sort of trade-off.
How does this new generation's relationship with books and reading differ from those before?
There is much more reliance on digital, even for reading. My kids rarely look at the actual newspaper. But it isn't like there was some golden age of reading when everyone was actually reading serious literature.
In an ever more distracted world, how do we pause?
And for me, it is more about being conscious, whether consciously concentrating or being consciously distracted. I'm eminently distractible and always have been. Technology didn't make me distractible. It just offers me more ways to distract myself. As if that's what I needed.
Thanks for this interview, David. Let me wish you every success with this new book.
Now listen to the same interview in three sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Even the most devoted readers have trouble finishing a blog post, much less an entire book. And today I'm talking with the Los Angeles Times book critic David Ulan. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Susan.
You've written a book titled The Lost Art of Reading. There you mix book criticism with memoirs from your life. You're particularly looking at the modern changing landscape of literature in the era of texts and tweets. Now, David, how does a book critic wind up writing a book about being too distracted to read books, about how this has changed reading habits?
The idea grew out of an essay I published in the LA Times. For months, I'd been having this trouble with distraction. You know, a lack of focus, sort of difficulties in concentrating. I was reluctant to confess this. Yeah, but I was pushed by my editor, you know. She said, if I was having this problem, surely others were too. The essay received an immense response, more than any other piece of writing I've ever published, with 98% of the people saying, thank you. It wasn't just me.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at question 3.
The book is framed around your son Noah's irritation at having to write comments on a novel for his high school teacher. Isn't there a computer application to do that?
Reading, by nature, is contemplative. You are immersed in story and language. Noah's concern about writing those comments was that it pulled him out of the story. Another form of distraction. These things are always some sort of trade-off.
Answer question 3, then look at questions 4 and 5.
How does this new generation's relationship with books and reading differ from those before?
There is much more reliance on digital, even for reading. My kids rarely look at the actual newspaper. But it isn't like there was some golden age of reading when everyone was actually reading serious literature.
In an ever more distracted world, how do we pause?
And for me, it is more about being conscious, whether consciously concentrating or being consciously distracted. I'm eminently distractible and always have been. Technology didn't make me distractible. It just offers me more ways to distract myself, as if that's what I needed.
Thanks for this interview, David. Let me wish you every success with this new book.
Answer questions 4 and 5. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
You're listening to Sue Williams, and this is The Science Show. Today I'm talking to you about acne. Yes, you heard me, acne. Zits, spots, you know those awful things teenagers get on their faces. It makes many a lad hide in the corner instead of messing around with the girls. Surely, if it's a put-off sexually, it would disappear pretty quickly. So why do we have acne? Professor Terence Keeley thinks he knows why.
It's a very good question. Acne has really bad effects on people. And research has shown that people with bad acne tend to marry about 2 years later than other people. They tend to have less good jobs and they're more likely to be unemployed. It's wholly negative in that respect. So the question is, why do we have acne? Well, if we could just start with what Darwin said about why we lost our body hair, because if we start with that, we can then move into acne, and then it'll make more sense.
Yeah, acne's always been a mystery to me. Please, go on.
Well, Darwin explained it, and people are now finally accepting his explanation. What Darwin said was that, well, when he went to South America and other places where we find so-called primitive peoples, who are often naked, he said they always tattooed their bodies or decorated their bodies somehow, and he said the reason we lost our body hair was so that we could turn our bodies into a canvas, some sort of painting, to look as beautiful as possible to attract mates. And that's why the body hair was lost. There's also a much more recent theory that we lost our body hair due to the general rise of temperatures in Africa, the cradle of humankind. Of course, this would have meant being less protected from the cold, for example, from extreme night temperatures.
OK, I understand the body hair thing. So what's acne about?
I think to understand something like acne, we've got to look horizontally and try to use a little bit of parallel thinking and ask, what are the factors that determine survival for young humans in the wild, as much as we can tell? And if you look at Stone Age peoples, the main thing is that it's a very dangerous place. The murder rate, the death rate, the violence rate is appalling. Hundreds of times more than the death rate in Sydney or London. And young people dying of violence is really quite a common event. And one of the things that really causes people to fight and die is fighting over women.
And
so I think that we can see acne as an entity that removes someone temporarily from the equation. They look less attractive, and therefore the older men will probably not see them as a threat.
OK, that makes sense then. Do you have any further examples of similar things at work?
Well, let me use as an analogy the orangutan. Male orangutans, in the main, are large and very aggressive. Rape is a fairly normal sexual right amongst orangutans.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. You see, about a quarter of male orangutans are very short, dwarf, and they have well-endowed sex organs. But in every other respect, they basically look like adolescents that haven't grown. And they do very well sexually because many female orangutans like these rather gentle males, and they have sex with them, and they have babies with them. And that's why one-fourth of all males are small and compassionate. And the other males don't recognise these dwarf males as competition, so they're quite happy for these little dwarf males to slip along and have sex with their females. The big males are doing other things because they don't recognise the dwarfs as sexual threats.
Thank you. That was Professor Terence Keeley. And now I have another guest with another viewpoint on the same issue, Professor Colin Groves. Professor?
Thanks, Sue. I'd like to correct as many of Professor Keeley's mistakes as I can, because his just-so story is unfortunately based on complete misinformation. He says the death rate in Stone Age peoples is hundreds of times more than the death rate in Sydney or London. Well, it's not. It's larger, it may be as much as 30% or 40% in some African Stone Age peoples, as he calls them, but not hundreds of times higher. Then orangutans, these young males that he calls dwarf orangutans, they're simply not grown up. They may well actually mature into the enormous males that we usually have. Their own mothers protect them. The females are not attracted to the young males, and none of his explanations has anything to do with the origin or loss of body hair. He's simply spinning a just-about-so story. He ought to learn a little science.
Thank you, Colin. That was Professor Colin Groves, and this was The Science Show.
Now listen to the same program in 5 sections. Look at questions 6 and 7.
You're listening to Sue Williams, and this is The Science Show. Today I'm talking to you about acne. Yes, you heard me, acne. Zits, spots, you know, those awful things teenagers get on their faces. It makes many a lad hide in the corner instead of messing around with the girls. Surely, if it's a put-off sexually, it would disappear pretty quickly. So why do we have acne? Professor Terence Keeley thinks he knows why.
It's a very good question. Acne has really bad effects on people, and research has shown that people with bad acne tend to marry about 2 years later than other people. They tend to have less good jobs, and they're more likely to be unemployed. It's wholly negative in that respect. So the question is, why do we have acne? Well, if we could just start with what Darwin said about why we lost our body hair, because if we start with that, we can then move into acne, and then it'll make more sense.
Answer questions 6 and 7, then look at questions 8 and 9.
Yeah, acne's always been a mystery to me. Please, go on.
Well, Darwin explained it, and people are now finally accepting his explanation. What Darwin said was that, well, when he went to South America and other places where we find so-called primitive peoples, who are often naked, but he said they always tattooed their bodies or decorated their bodies somehow, and he said the reason we lost our body hair was so that we could turn our bodies into a canvas, some sort of painting, to look as beautiful as possible to attract mates. And that's why the body hair was lost. There's also a much more recent theory that we lost our body hair due to the general rise of temperatures in Africa, the cradle of humankind. Of course, this would have meant being less protected from the cold, for example, from extreme night temperatures.
Answer questions 8 and 9. Look at questions 10 and 11.
Okay, I understand the body hair thing. So what's acne about?
I think to understand something like acne, we've got to look horizontally and try to use a little bit of parallel thinking and ask, what are the factors that determine survival for young humans in the wild, as much as we can tell? And if you look at Stone Age peoples, the main thing is that it's a very dangerous place. The murder rate, the death rate, the violence rate is appalling, hundreds of times more than the death rate in Sydney or London. And young people dying of violence is really quite a common event. And one of the things that really causes people to fight and die is fighting over women.
And
so I think that we can see acne as an entity that removes someone temporarily from the equation. They look less attractive, and therefore the older men will probably not see them as a threat.
Okay, that makes sense then.
Answer questions 10 and 11, then look at questions 12 and 13.
Do you have any further examples of similar things at work?
Well, let me use as an analogy the orangutan. Male orangutans, in the main, are large and very aggressive. Rape is a fairly normal sexual right amongst orangutans.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. You see, about a quarter of male orangutans are very short, dwarf, and they have well-endowed sex organs. But in every other respect, they basically look like adolescents that haven't grown. And they do very well sexually because many female orangutans like these rather gentle males, and they have sex with them, and they have babies with them. And that's why one-fourth of all males are small and compassionate. And the other males don't recognise these dwarf males as competition, so they're quite happy for these little dwarf males to slip along and have sex with their females. The big males are doing other things because they don't recognise the dwarfs as sexual threats.
Thank you. That was Professor Terence Keeley.
Answer questions 12 and 13. Look at questions 14 and 15.
And now I have another guest with another viewpoint on the same issue, Professor Colin Groves. Professor?
Thanks, Sue. I'd like to correct as many of Professor Keeley's mistakes as I can, because his just-so story is unfortunately based on complete misinformation. He says the death rate in Stone Age peoples is hundreds of times more than the death rate in Sydney or London. Well, it's not. It's larger, it may be as much as 30% or 40% in some African Stone Age peoples, as he calls them, but not hundreds of times higher. Then orangutans, these young males that he calls dwarf orangutans, they're simply not grown up. They may well actually mature into the enormous males that we usually have. Their own mothers protect them. The females are not attracted to the young males, and none of his explanations has anything to do with the origin or loss of body hair. He's simply spinning a just-about-so story. He ought to learn a little science.
Thank you, Colin. That was Professor Colin Groves, and this was The Science Show.
Answer questions 14 and 15. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 16.
Remember my friend Charles?
Yeah, sure.
He's lost 21 pounds.
Good for him.
Well, Charles has eaten only potatoes. In 2 months, he's eaten 400 pounds of spuds. His blood sugar level is lower, he feels great, he's sure potatoes are really healthy, but most of all, he knows that he can't keep this up in the long term.
I've never heard that about potatoes before.
Answer question 16, then look at question 17.
Christine told me about a snowman stolen in Chatham.
What? Why did Christine tell you about such a stupid thing?
Well, it seems that the woman dialed the emergency number and demanded the police come out immediately to investigate. The woman said, "It ain't a nice road, but you don't expect anybody to nick your snowman." And she told how she used pound coins for the eyes, and she wanted them back.
I don't expect the police were too pleased, were they?
No, they weren't.
Answer question 17. Look at question 18.
We've all often worked right through our lunch breaks, sitting right at our desks in the office, haven't we? Mostly right in front of the computer, eh?
I know I have. As a matter of fact, I did just that yesterday. I was in such a rush.
But maybe we shouldn't. A recent study found out that if we eat at our desks while working on papers or the computer, we'll remember less of what we ate, much less. We forget it while we work, and so, we feel less full.
I know I eat faster at my desk, and I get hungry faster.
And the study showed that we actually eat more total food throughout the day by eating lunch while working at our desks.
Answer question 18, then look at question 19.
I hadn't really realised the sandwich shop at Euston Station could be such a dangerous place.
No, it always seems quite, drab and ordinary when I visit it.
But last week, the world-famous violinist Min Jin Kim was on her way to catch a train when she stopped off for a £3 sandwich. And when she sat down at a table, she put down her £1 million Stradivarius violin. That's when a thief took it. She only had her back turned for, about 10 seconds. And it's a 315-year-old violin, mind you.
That's an outrage. Who's going to steal a violin?
And the thief can't even sell the violin. Every single Stradivarius is too well known. There's absolutely no market for them whatsoever.
No, I guess not.
Answer question 19. Look at question 20.
You remember that pile of logs in the Central Park?
Sure, they've been there for 2 to 3 years.
Yesterday, the mayor ordered a logger to remove the pile to cut it up for firewood, and that's how the problem started.
What do you mean, a problem?
It was a work by a local sculptor, Paul Griffin. Someone ran over from the city office and said it shouldn't be cut up, and the logger stopped.
I can understand the mix-up. It did look like a pile of firewood.
Answer question 20. This is the fourth part of the test. In this part, you will hear 5 short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
Were you at the banquet last night?
Sure. Didn't you see me there?
No, I didn't.
Really? But I could see you across the room up front, over on the right.
Yeah, that's where I was sitting, but I didn't see you, even though I stood up and turned around and looked around for you after we ate. I'd been led to understand you were coming.
Of course I was. I wouldn't have missed that banquet for anything. The annual awards dinner is important for our club.
It sure is. But wasn't that an excellent after-dinner speech by John?
Answer question 21. Look at question 22.
There was a complete breakdown of law and order in our school last week.
At your high school? What do you mean? What happened?
Do you remember that I told you some of the teachers were upset over how the boys dressed?
Yeah, I remember you saying something about that.
Well, the principal had set up a new rule, a sort of dress code for the boys. They all had to wear clean shirts or sweatshirts. And it resulted in everyone, absolutely everyone, male, female, students, teachers, coming to school in dirty, messy clothes. It was just plain ugly.
Answer question 22, then look at question 23.
Hi, how are you? Did you get your history essay finished?
Yes, I did, but writing the paper was hard work. 7 pages on the causes of the Second World War, that's no easy job.
No, it isn't. I worked on mine until 1 in the morning.
I had to work even later, until 3.
By the way, did you see Susan yesterday?
Yeah, and she'd already turned her paper in, ahead of time, and she was really glowing with pride.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Have you talked to John recently?
No, can't say I have. Why would I talk with him anyway? He's just strange.
I know what you mean.
Last week, you know, he told me to stay out of his way. Can you imagine?
But now he seems to think that he can change from being everyone's enemy into being everyone's friend overnight.
Really? Now that's simply far-fetched. He needs to get a grip on things.
I know. It just doesn't work like that. Never has, never will.
Answer question 24. Then look at question 25.
You know, the two of us really need to negotiate about how to set up that new contract with AAA.
I know. AAA is one of our biggest customers. We can't let them down.
No, we'd be in real trouble without their business.
And I could detect they were a bit irritated when I talked with Susan in their sales department last week. We have to ensure they don't start looking elsewhere for electrical motors. You and I are going to have to sit down and work out the details.
Yeah, how about getting together next Tuesday, then?
Sorry, I'm fully occupied for the entire week.
Answer question 25. This is the 5th part of the test. There are 5 sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section twice, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A, listen to this section.
The American Civil War took place from 1861 to 1865. The involvement of Finns in the war has received very little attention. According to one researcher, Solomon Ilmanen, the rate of participation of the Finns was significant and greater than we would have expected. Ilmanen estimates that only some 1,000 Finns lived in the U.S. during the 1860s. He points out that of this number, perhaps as many as 100 Finns fought in the Northern Army and Navy. In particular, he notes that almost all of these Finns joined the Northern Navy. However, there were very poor records kept at that time.
Now listen to this again, and then answer the question.
The American Civil War took place from 1861 to 1865. The involvement of Finns in the war has received very little attention. According to one researcher, Solomon Ilmanen, the rate of participation of the Finns was significant and greater than we would have expected. Ilmanen estimates that only some 1,000 Finns lived in the U.S. during the 1860s. He points out that of this number, perhaps as many as 100 Finns fought in the Northern Army and Navy. In particular, he notes that almost all of these Finns joined the Northern Navy. However, there were very poor records kept at that time.
Read question B. Question B. Listen to this section.
Today, farmers are accused of interfering with nature. But farmers have done this for thousands of years. As one dramatic example, wild sheep didn't and don't have wool. Nature gave sheep a long, coarse hair coat instead. In the beginning, sheep had just a short, insulating undercoat, too short to make thread. In the highlands of Iran and Turkey, woolly sheep were a natural mutation. This probably occurred naturally when sheep were taken into these more northern climates, where they weren't native. Once longer wool occurred, generations of farmers there encouraged it by selectively breeding their sheep for longer and longer wool fibers. Previously, sheep had been herded just for meat.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Today, farmers are accused of interfering with nature. But farmers have done this for thousands of years. As one dramatic example, wild sheep didn't and don't have wool. Nature gave sheep a long, coarse hair coat instead. In the beginning, sheep had just a short, insulating undercoat, too short to make thread. In the highlands of Iran and Turkey, woolly sheep were a natural mutation. This probably occurred naturally when sheep were taken into these more northern climates, where they weren't native. Once longer wool occurred, generations of farmers there encouraged it by selectively breeding their sheep for longer and longer wool fibers. Previously, sheep had been herded just for meat.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section.
A team of architects have created a so-called transparent concrete that lets light pour into a room so that the walls look like giant windows. The material has dozens of tiny holes in it, which lets light through. The 2 to 3 millimeter holes, which go right through the concrete panel, are in fact filled with a plastic material that lets the light through. This does a far better job of capturing and channeling daylight than the previous technologies that relied upon built-in fiber optic cables. There are no open holes to let the rain or wind in, nor will the holes clog up and have to be cleaned.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
A team of architects have created a so-called transparent concrete that lets light pour into a room so that the walls look like giant windows. The material has dozens of tiny holes in it, which lets light through. The 2 to 3 millimeter holes, which go right through the concrete panel, are in fact filled with a plastic material that lets the light through. This does a far better job of capturing and channeling daylight than the previous technologies that relied upon built-in fiber optic cables. There are no open holes to let the rain or wind in, nor will the holes clog up and have to be cleaned.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section.
Among the latest trends in Britain, shower use is on the up, with most people under 45 apparently preferring them. On the one hand, a recommendation has been made that a 5-minute shower would use considerably less water than a bath. However, a recent English survey showed that two-thirds of us spend longer than 5 minutes in the shower. We're usually in there almost three times as long. On the other hand, it's been recommended that every family house have at least one bathtub. This keeps the options open for people with young children who enjoy bath time, as well as for those of us who like to relax in a bath ourselves.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Among the latest trends in Britain, shower use is on the up, with most people under 45 apparently preferring them. On the one hand, a recommendation has been made that a 5-minute shower would use considerably less water than a bath. However, a recent English survey showed that two-thirds of us spend longer than 5 minutes in the shower. We're usually in there almost three times as long. On the other hand, it's been recommended that every family house have at least one bathtub. This keeps the options open for people with young children who enjoy bath time, as well as for those of us who like to relax in a bath ourselves.
Read question E. Question E. Listen to this section.
There comes a time in every boy band's life when they must put away childish things. Childish things such as upbeat danceable tunes, shaving razors, and above all, lyrics with a recognisable narrative. Instead, they enter the unquestionably adult world of power ballads, facial hair and, this is important, lyrics that are little more than strings of vague pseudo-profound metaphors. This is when they reach for DAMPE. I mean, the deep and meaningless pop epic. Every good boy band must perform one, and one of the top 10 is a classic example of the DAMPE genre. Take That's vaguely triumphant, vaguely uplifting, utterly unintelligible, The Flood. We join Take That in singing these words. Standing on the edge of forever, at the start of whatever, shouting love at the world.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
There comes a time in every boy band's life when they must put away childish things. Childish things such as upbeat danceable tunes, shaving razors, and above all, lyrics with a recognisable narrative. Instead, they enter the unquestionably adult world of power ballads, facial hair and, this is important, lyrics that are little more than strings of vague pseudo-profound metaphors. This is when they reach for DAMPE. I mean, the deep and meaningless pop epic. Every good boy band must perform one, and one of the top 10 is a classic example of the DAMPE genre. Take That's vaguely triumphant, vaguely uplifting, utterly unintelligible, The Flood. We join Take That in singing these words. Standing on the edge of forever, at the start of whatever, shouting love at the world.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.